Hey, this is Evan Phillips from Anchorage, Alaska. You're listening to Short Ropes on the Fern Line. Alaska. The highest concentration of big, remote mountains in North America. For generations, a unique group of climbers have tested themselves in these vast alpine arenas. The Chugach, St. Elias, the Hays, Neocola, the Kachatnas, the Revelations. Their stories are etched on high alpine walls. Their visions follow lines of cold gray ice. What inspires them? What makes them come back? Who survives? Who suffers? These are the stories we'll tell on season one of The Fern Line. Hey friends, I'm Evan Phillips, and you're listening to The Fern Line, a podcast about the lives of mountain climbers. On season one, I'm chatting with alpinists and other outdoor enthusiasts who are pushing the limits of what's possible in Alaska's mountains. My goal is to have meaningful conversations with extraordinary people, folks who choose to live full-value lifestyles in one of the most beautiful and wild regions on the planet. Well, hey friends, it's good to be with you today. The summer is in full swing here in Alaska, and we're approaching solstice, which means the days are long and full of adventure, which actually ties in nicely with today's episode. But first, I just want to remind folks that if you enjoy the podcast, there's a few simple and easy ways you can help out. The first is to review the podcast on iTunes or within your favorite podcast app. Reviews are a great way to let potential listeners know that the podcast is a quality listening experience. Another way you can help out is by connecting with me on Facebook and Instagram and by sharing episode links via your own social media outlets. And finally, one of the simplest and most effective ways you can support the Fern Line is by telling someone. Word of mouth is the best way to get information out there, and it helps create the grassroots vibe I'm going for. So make sure you tell a friend. If you want to get in touch, you can reach me at thefernline@gmail.com. I'm actually amazed at how many emails I'm getting, and I love the fact that I can interact and get to know people directly. So please keep sending emails, keep saying hello, and please keep giving me feedback. All right, so with that, it's time to grab your favorite beverage and get cozy on your couch or camp chair. And settle in for this episode of The Fern Line.
But to go back and be in a place you've never been and you haven't really heard of many people going and sort of connecting the landscape in your head by being out there is, I think it's really special.
I'm not gonna hang around, wasting time just being down again. I'm gonna live in stereo. I'm gonna spend my time in open space. Breathe the air at my own pace again. I'm gonna live in stereo. When everyone forgets about their you, we'll sit around just planning our next move.
Last month, I sat down to chat with Alaskan climber and mountain explorer Katie Strong. Although Katie is an ambitious adventurer, she's also a driven environmental lawyer, which means her career oftentimes takes center stage, leaving her with limited amounts of free time. But that doesn't keep her from spending time in the mountains, It just means she has to pack big trips into shorter blocks. Enter the micro expedition.
We can laugh and we can cry, get worked up and mystified sometimes.
Capitalizing on her proximity to the vast expanses of Chugach State Park and the small but rugged Talkeetna Mountains, Katie prefers to spend her weekends traveling light and covering long distances. I asked Katie to talk about her experiences in Alaska's mountains and how she first got into the concept of the micro-expedition.
We'll take in all the mountains and the sun. Lift our heads up to the sky. Blow out all those city lights. Make the best of what we have today.
I went from being someone who like was a rock climber and thought being in the big mountains and being out in these like really remote places, that was amazing and cool and I really wanted to do that, but it was for other people. Like I wasn't there yet, and it was, you know, yeah, it was for other people. And I went to one of Luke Mel's slideshow on the Logan Traverse, actually, but he also talked about his experiences with the Winter Classics, and something about that just clicked for me, and it was like, I have to do that. That it just like just grabbed me.
What was it about it that grabbed you, do you think?
I'm not quite sure. It's one of those, like, you know, I had read for years about people doing big alpine climbs, and that always intrigued me, but it never enough to go and do anything about it. But when I learned about the classics, it really resonated, and I was so unprepared, like with actual practical experience. And I was kind of dragging my feet a little, like feeling I still need to work up to it. I have really a hard time with cold feet. And it had really held me back for a long time. And an ex-boyfriend had given me his old pair of boots, ski boots, trying to get me to go ice climbing, which is like the coldest thing you can be doing.
Yeah.
And I saw, like, Luke had a little segment about his gear. And one of the things he was doing at that time was taking those double plastic boots and cutting the top off and making these sort of Franken boots. And he talked about how warm they were. And that just really caught my eye. And I was like, whoa, well, I have this pair of like size 10 or whatever double plastic boots that I can't, they're too big for me. At the time, I wasn't skiing in the backcountry yet. And so I had emailed Luke a few days later and was like, hey, so could I try your skis? Because I have these boots and I'm pretty interested in this. And yeah, he was so generous. He let me borrow the skis, and I was so afraid that it was like early season and I was going to scratch them up. And he just laughed because, you know, because he knew in the classics, we walk over rocks, we take them through rivers. Yeah. Like, we do not treat these skis very nicely. But anyway, he lent me his pair of skis so I could use them. And it was amazing. My feet were hot. And it was once I did that and realized, oh, I can keep my feet warm. The whole winter world opened up to me. No longer was I just spending my winter in the climbing gym. Yeah. I was, yeah, able to actually get out in the mountains. And
okay. Maybe talk a little bit about that 2013 classic. Talk about that experience.
Well, my first hurdle was I didn't have anyone to do it with. And I had just met this young climber. He was 24 at the time, and I was 30. His name's John Ross, and just all enthusiasm. And he was in Spain when I asked, because I was pretty sure he is so enthusiastic that he would say yes to just about anything. So I asked if he wanted to do it with me, and he was all in. Turns out later he thought I was asking if he wanted to do the summer classic. Mm-hmm. So when he got back from Spain, he had like 4 weeks to get ready.
Yeah, you're like, hey, are you ready?
Yeah, something like that. And I had never winter camped before. I hadn't done much backcountry skiing, and John had lived on the Juneau ice sheet for about a month one summer. So he had glacier experience. But, you know, looking back, we were so just not prepared. You know, I go out now for those experiences and I know what the possibilities are of what might happen and how to deal with it. And we didn't bring a sat phone, which I remember thinking after about 4 hours in was the stupidest decision ever. But then we just sandwiched ourselves between other skiers, so we knew that like someone was behind us. Yeah. And we changed our route so that we could be just following people's tracks. So we had two strong teams in front of us, and we basically just never looked at our GPS or the maps. We just played a really big game of follow the leader. It was fabulous. I got to see places I never thought I would be in mountains like that.
Yeah, and what was the route?
It was in the Wrangells. We went over the President's Chair. So up the Nazina River from McCarthy, up the Nazina, onto the glaciers there, up over President's Chair and down the Nabesna Glacier, and then up over Noyes Mountain to the Old Toe Cutoff.
Wow, that's a big trip.
It's a big trip, yeah. And what I lacked in sort of practical experience, I made up for with a lot of research. I spent time reading all the blogs, figuring out all I could so that I'd be at least felt prepared. John is pretty good at flying by the seat of his pants, except he ended up with really bad frostbite, and that was scary for both of us. He decided he wanted to keep skiing, but that took a toll. It took him like 3 or 4 months, I think. So John and I are super close adventure partners. I would say we joke a lot about like we're kind of siblings. We fight like siblings sometimes, but like super, I trust him with my life quite regularly.
Yeah.
And I mean, skiing under the Northern Lights, we were trying to push it in on the last day, and or our last day. We didn't quite make it. I remember we huddled underneath a tree and I basically slept in his lap for 2 hours. And then the next morning I was like, John, I'm cold, I'm getting up. And he's like, uh-huh. And like I got up and got all my things, and I'm like literally standing on the trail and he's still like curled up in this little ball. I'm like, yeah. John, I'm leaving now.
Yeah.
And he got himself up, but it really showed me what you can do in a week. You know, we skied across 2 USGS quads, which for Alaska, the quads cover a lot of ground.
Yeah.
To get to do that in a week and pretty light. Wouldn't say we were incredibly fast because we just didn't know what we were in for.
Yeah.
But it really opened my eyes, like what you can do if you put in some long days and come in better prepared.
Most quality adventures in the mountains come with some ups and downs. A perfect day scrambling in the hills can change in an instant with a sprained ankle, a reversal in the weather, or a simple route-finding error. Katie had certainly experienced all of the above during the Wilderness Classics, but what about on her own trips? I asked Katie to talk about a challenging situation she's faced during a micro-expedition and what she learned from it.
Last winter of 2015-16, two girlfriends and I, we went from the Goldmint Lot in Hatcher Pass to Yoda Road outside of Talkeetna. The idea was to replicate a trip that Joe Stock and Dana Drummond and another guy did, going up and over Montana Peak and then getting up on the glaciers and coming out. So many things went wrong. I was sick to start with, but we'd all taken a day off of work, and so I wasn't so sick I was going to stay home, but definitely dragging. And then we got up to the Mint Hut, where we could either be going over Backdoor Gap or going up over Montana Peak. And the weather was pretty gnarly, like the visibility wasn't any good. So we started going up Backdoor Gap, and then we were like a third of the way up and everything cleared. And we were like, oh man, well, should we go over that way now? But we were trying to not let indecision make us yo-yo back and forth the potential routes, because we had decided, okay, well, if we don't go over Montana Peak, we can drop into the Keshwitna and go down a little bit and then go up over these other passes. So that's what we ended up doing. We went down past the Bomber Hut, down, I think it's Birchleaf Creek, to the Keshwitna. We got up into going over this pass, and it had taken us all day to get there. So it was just about dusk, and we were looking, basically we came up to the top of the pass and looking down, you're like, oh man, it's like super steep, it's cliffs scattered about, skiing that's like way above my ability level. I was like, okay, well, let's, you know, go along the ridgeline a little bit, see if we can find an easier way down. And really had the pressure of night coming on and being behind schedule and not wanting to go, you know, just like not wanting to drop back down to someplace reasonable to camp, you know. And I got further along and looked down. I was like, oh, well, you know, it's really steep, but I could put my crampons on and boot down this. Like, that would probably be okay. And I said to my first friend who was with me, I was like, what do you think about booting straight down this? And she's like, yeah, I think that'd be okay. And my other friend, she knows me as a skier, and she knows me as a very conservative skier, because I am. And I was like, hey, Lizzie, do you want to come look at this? And based on me being a conservative skier, she's like, no, I'm sure it's fine. She doesn't know me as a climber. And so I was climbing down. I kicked a bit of cornice off, which was, you know, makes your heart stop a little bit. And then got further down into what the face's real snowpack was going to be, which was basically bottomless sugar snow. And I could feel with my crampons just like kitty litter. And kind of, I very much got to this point where I couldn't go back up. There was no way.
Wow.
And at that point, Lizzie came over and looked down and was like, I'm not so sure, but this is a great idea. I had one stove, they had one stove. So I told them, I was like, I can't come back up, but this sucks pretty bad. And you guys should maybe just go out a different way. And I have to go out this way, which is a terrible conversation to have when you're like clinging to a face, a pretty yeah. steep face. And they decided they were going to come down, and it was a hard down climb. It was the first, my feet kind of like cut underneath me because I was trying to tamp the sugar snow down as I went. And I definitely had a moment of like, this is what it's going to be like to fall down 1,000 foot, like steep snow face, because my skis started catching and I wasn't sure I could get my feet back out from underneath me. It was fine. And eventually, you know, we all got down. And I think the hardest part about that for me was watching my friends, because I was ahead of everybody, and just looking back up and being like, feeling the weight of, if they fall, it's my fault, because I was the one that chose to come down there. And it didn't feel like a good decision. It felt like a decision driven by, you know, commitment to keep moving forward. And it's not a good basis for a decision. And we all got down, and the next morning we got up early because we were at this point really far behind schedule. And I think the major reason we were behind schedule is it was a low snow year. And so when we were hitting the descent into the Keshwitna drainage, it was, you know, ski down with your skins on, because it was so, there was very little snow. You're really picking your way down through alder. And then when we were getting out of that drainage, it was put your skis on your backpack and bushwhack through the alder and the Devil's Club. And the very last day, we had popped out of the mountains and were kind of more rolling hills-like terrain, but it was definitely slower because it was in alder and black spruce forest. So, like, imagine the thickest patch of woods you can imagine for skiing through. Yeah. And then, yeah. It was beautiful and, I mean, great time with friends and really rewarding. But to go back and be in a place you've never been and you haven't really heard of many people going and sort of connecting the landscape in your head by being out there is, I think it's really special.
On the flip side of that, like what's a, maybe like a micro adventure that you've done where it's been, well, I don't know if this ever happened, but one that's maybe gone exactly the way you would have hoped it would have gone, or it was easy.
Yeah, totally. It was in our backyard here in the Chugach State Park. I had initially two friends join me and then one joined midway, but we went from the little town of Bird and we traversed the park over to Pioneer, which covers a lot of really wild space. I haven't done the math myself, but the people that have done a version of this traverse or just connecting those two points say it's the longest two points across the park. So it makes the longest traverse. So that had appeal to me, and I hadn't been most of the places that we went, just a little section of the Crow Pass Trail. But we went up Bird Creek, up to Ship Pass, that first night. And then the next day we went to past Grizzly Bear Lakes and dropped down to the Crow Pass Trail, and then up Dishwater Creek to get up near Bombardment Pass, where we camped below the pass, and then met our third friend the next morning up on Bombardment, and then behind Rumble, down the Wall Street Glacier, up between the Watchmen, and dropped down to the Aklutna, then up Bold Ridge Overlook Trail, which was great because there's no bushwhacking. Camped sort of in the valley right below Bold, and then took the ridges all the way to Pioneer the next day and dropped out. And I mean, it was big, wild terrain. We got to walk on glaciers. I think we had one day that was a 5-pass day. And one of those trips, we were just like, yeah, that was perfect.
Yeah. That sounds like an awesome trip.
Yeah, no, like, it's sort of almost boring to talk about because you're like, well, it was perfect. We went hiking and it was great, and but it was like, you know, we went light, we moved fast, we didn't, you know, not typical backpacking where you're like enjoying the place by sitting and looking. We were like enjoying the place by moving through it. And I've heard criticism from people being about that approach, thinking like, oh, well, you're not really appreciating it because you're not just stopping and being present. And I would beg to differ and just experience it, you know, like differently.
In my chat with Katie about her micro expeditions, it was apparent that underneath each trip, each friendship, each idea, was a deep love and reverence for Alaska's wilderness. It was also apparent that her career as an environmental lawyer, combined with her personal activities in the mountains, makes for a purposeful and fulfilling lifestyle choice. Pretty damn inspiring, if you ask me. Before we ended our conversation, I asked Katie to talk about her future goals in the mountains and whether or not she'll break from the micro expedition paradigm.
Sort of vague, nebulous, I'd like to see more of the Chugach State Park. I'd like to do a few backpacking and pack rafting trips here, but I would say those are just like fit in as I can. Right now I'm training really hard to run 100 miles in September. That's one of those things where For me, it scares me a lot. I've done it once, and I cried, like, bawled the last 9 miles. And so my goal this time is to not be crying the last 9 miles. but it's this beautiful, I'm doing a different race this time. It's point to point, 99% single track in northern Minnesota. Very hilly. I think it's like 20,000 feet of gain, 20,000 of floss for the course. So it's a lot of like,
sounds like a little up and downs.
Yeah. It's a, you know, it's doing it is a wonderful thing. I like best sort of like the push to get out the door and run around in the mountains here. Yesterday I went and ran up McHugh and then dropped down to the lake and came out Rabbit Creek and then went up Peak 3 and just, you know, it's an excuse to spend time running around. And when someone gives you a little social pressure to do something else, it's like, no, I actually have to do this.
Yeah.
Well, next year I have extended leave at work, so I get 3 months off and...
Bitchin'.
Yeah, it's the first time I've had a chunk of time like that since I started my professional career. So I'm not quite sure yet what I'm going to do with myself. It's really hard because you go from really focusing on these sort of micro expeditions and a week to maybe possibly 2 weeks of time off to thinking like 3 weeks. And it's kind of almost debilitating how many options there are. And I have an 8-year-old golden retriever who I love dearly, and I'm really struggling with probably having to leave her with someone for 3 months. So part of me, I'm thinking, tossing around the idea in my head about buying a dog bike trailer and going on a bike tour. There's a lot of back roads in Canada that look kind of appealing. Maybe. We'll see. I'd also really like to hike across the Brooks Range, do that traverse sort of. I don't believe in flying into the backcountry. So I would start off of a road in Canada and probably hike to Kotzebue where I could get a commercial flight. That's just a wilderness ethic of my own. I don't really, for me, that shrinks the wilderness, and I don't have any interest in shrinking the wilderness. Maybe hike across the Brooks Range. The possibilities are endless. It's really tempting to go walk into the Aragetch or walk into the Ruth Gorge, because it's a time where I'd actually have the amount of time necessary to do that. Lots of possibilities, not quite sure.
All right, well, thanks for hanging out with me today. I hope you enjoyed Katie's stories as much as I did, and I hope you can apply some of her alpine wisdom to your next trip in the mountains. Before I sign off today, I want to give a shout out to the Winter Wildlands Alliance, where Katie is a participating board member. The Winter Wildlands Alliance is a national nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting and preserving winter wildlands and a quality human-powered snow sports experience on public lands through education, outreach, and advocacy. The group is an alliance of over 100 grassroots environmental organizations and backcountry partners. Flagship programs include Snow School, which engages over 30,000 kids in science-based field trips and education across 60 sites nationwide. There's also the Backcountry Film Festival, which premieres every November in Boise, Idaho, and tours over 100 locations worldwide. To find out more information or how you can get involved, check out winterwildlands.org. Don't forget to review the podcast on iTunes or within your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Fernline email list at thefernline.com. And finally, if you dig the tunes you hear, you can check out more of my music at Spotify, Bandcamp, iTunes, and evanphillips.net. Until next time, I'm Evan Phillips, and this is The Fernline. Love will make you blind for some time. Thank you.
but you don't sleep. You see the climb, but it's too steep. Your body's broken, broken down. You put your head against the ground. It hurts to know that you were wrong, but you can sing a brighter song now. For all the times you took her name, and all the times you played the game, cast the line and reeled it in, and caught the unforgiven sin. But nobody's gonna keep you down, you just gotta pick yourself up. So don't try looking in her mind, it's all downhill until you're fine. And you know that love will make you blind for some time.